If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference, this show is for you.
Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
The person that I was when I came off that stage was completely different from when I stepped on the stage. I mean, I know that really that 6 minutes, as goofy as it sounds, I really kind of feel like that 6 minutes really, really kind of changed my life.
Award-winning broadcast professional Brian Baltashevitz is also a comedian. Besides being a senior producer and marketer at WBTV in Charlotte, North Carolina, Brian does part-time stand-up comedy, and he uses his writing talents and his sense of humor both to make people laugh and to overcome a challenge. Brian, what do you remember best about your growing up years that led to you becoming both a broadcast professional and a comedian?
What I remember, best is that I think my upbringing was actually pretty normal. I mean, I don't remember any real specific trauma. I wasn't really lacking of anything. My parents loved me very much, and they don't, they were very fair, and I don't really remember anything sort of standing out as being a real struggle. You know, I think my upbringing was actually pretty uneventful, if that makes any sense. But I don't really recall anything other than, you know, sort of having this stutter that was out of the ordinary.
When did you realize your creative gifts and your sense of humor?
I started when I realized that, you know, the stutter was really kind of sort of going to get in the way, was in elementary school. And I took to writing. And it just became so much easier to communicate, but also to sort of get the things that were going on in my head across in writing. It was just so much easier to do that than it was to speak. And so it was probably somewhere around maybe third or fourth grade that I really sort of took to writing. And I would write short stories and plays and longer form things. And it was basically, other than all the normal things that kids that age do, like Little League baseball and things like that, it became kind of what I did when I wasn't either in school or playing with my friends or playing Little League or whatever. I would just write. And then, so that was probably when I really kind of started to embrace the kind of the creative aspect of my personality.
Fast forward to now, with 20 years in the broadcast business, stand-up comedy, and a number of awards, up to and including that one promo that you wrote for your television station, which I recommend people take a look at, about Firehouse Chili. How did you deal with your stutter other than writing through growing up years and going off to college?
It can really kind of, it can be divided into sort of pre-college and post-college. I mean, pre-college and even through college, it was a bit of a struggle. You know, I tend to be kind of hard on myself, and it wasn't, my inability to communicate was really kind of a big deal. The people who were close to me didn't care, but you know, when it came time to having to have phone conversations or speak to instructors or you know, anyone who wasn't sort of in my inner circle, it was a real problem. When it became clear that I wasn't going to be able to have a career in front of the microphone,
well, I would have loved to have had a career in radio, and I realized that probably wasn't going to be possible. And so I thought journalism was a good way to go. I could get into print, and I could take advantage of my writing ability and work in for newspapers and magazines. Now, thank God I didn't, since print is, you know, has kind of gone the way it's gone. But I got into college then, and I realized that I could take my love of writing and combine a visual element to it and get into broadcasting. So that was kind of how that came to be, was through about halfway through my college career. Once I got out of college and into my career, it became real evident that I was going to have to put this whole thing behind me. And it wasn't an obstacle probably for the people around me as much as it was for me, for my confidence, for my ability to be able to do my job as a producer director. And so that was kind of where the stand-up thing. I wanted to do something that would prove to myself once and for all that I wasn't going to allow my stutter, even if only for myself, to define who I am.
What was the catalyst for you in deciding, yes, I am going to do stand-up and get out of this?
I wanted to do the thing that would probably scare me the most, and I was always sort of fascinated by stand-up and about the how comedy is crafted and how comedians work the audience and work the stage and things like that. So I was always sort of fascinated with kind of the mechanics of comedy, and I just thought, if I'm going to do something, sort of, I mean, not unlike, you know, jumping out of a perfectly good airplane if you're afraid of flying or something like that. You know, I wanted to do something that was really going to prove once and for all that it wasn't going to define me, and also just probably kind of shock myself into, you know, okay, if I can do that, I can do almost anything.
What were the steps for you from there to get into doing stand-up?
Well, I had no material, so the first step was to work on some jokes, on some material, and then find a place to actually perform. I'm trying to remember now, the first time I performed, I think, was at an open mic night in Lansing, Michigan. And I think you got about 6 minutes. So I prepared for weeks, writing down jokes and figuring out what was funny and really kind of who I wanted to be on stage. And so it was, I'm sure, a good, you know, easily months before I actually did it, until I felt ready to actually, you know, take that chance and actually do it.
Take me back in your imagination to that first night in Lansing. What was it like?
It was equal parts horrifying and exhilarating. I mean, I know that, you know, the person that I was when I came off that stage was completely different from when I stepped on the stage. I mean, I know that really that 6 minutes, as goofy as it sounds, I really kind of feel like that 6 minutes really, really kind of changed my life. And it was, I remember that the crowd was about half full, so there was maybe 100-150 people at the Mantha Comedy Club. I think I was scheduled to go up in about the middle of the group, which is kind of where you want to be in an open mic situation. You don't want to go up first, and you don't want to go up at the end of the night because everyone's kind of worn out by then. So, and I remember getting that first laugh. You know, the feeling when, you know, a room full of people laugh at something that you've constructed, at something that you've written, and that you're performing yourself on stage, and you're it. You know, I mean, you're the only thing, you know, going on. So everybody's focused on you. But just that first laugh is really intoxicating. And from then on, it was. I mean, people laughed when I had hoped that they would laugh. And you know, the thing that I found too was that I did about 6 minutes, and I spent about the first minute talking about my stutter because I knew I would have to lay it out there. I mean, something really kind of happened between me and the audience, and that I was making jokes about my stutter. So it was, you know, stuttering, you know, I mean, it's like heavy lifting. There's a lot of, you know, heavy breathing and funny faces, but eventually the work gets done. So there's kind of, which is really kind of a lame joke looking back now, but I mean, in the context of my set, it works. And you know, so giving the audience permission to laugh with me rather than at me was really a very liberating feeling. And it was kind of in that first minute that I realized, you know, I think I'm going to be okay. And so then being able to spend the next 4 or 5 minutes talking about, you know, other things about myself that I felt funny that weren't necessarily stutter related, it was also liberating in a completely different way. I mean, I didn't have to focus the entire 6 minutes on the way I spoke. I could just speak. And, it was the first time in, 24, 25 years that I had experienced that feeling.
Tell me about crafting the comedy, as you mentioned before, so that people are laughing with and not laughing at, especially when you deal with something like stuttering.
I think our general, as humans, I think we're wired to sort of laugh at things. And you know, my wife laughs when people fall down. And it's what she does. So I always know if someone falls down, she's going to laugh. And, you know, so we're just kind of wired to find humor in you know, unfortunate things happening to other people. I don't know what that says about us, but that's just kind of who we are. So, when I get up on stage and I give the audience permission to laugh at that, it takes what could be a weapon. I don't necessarily want to use the word weapon there, but you know what I mean. It takes the power, at least for me, it takes the power away from the audience, and it gives it back to me. It gives me, it's really hard to explain. It gives me giving them the permission to laugh sort of with me about it is much preferable than, you know, having them laugh at me, which was the situation, obviously, growing up in grade school and to a lesser degree in high school. But, you know, so as far as crafting the jokes, it was important to me to make sure that I found the humor in it without necessarily saying, you know, oh, poor me. And so I crafted jokes that were sort of, you know, I can spin I can spin my speech patterns in my favor because I'm supposed to fill 6 minutes here tonight, but I only have about 47 seconds of material. So it's things like that that, you know, so it's not, you know, oh, poor me, I have this thing. It's, you know, here I am, here's this thing that I'm dealing with, and it's okay for us to find the humor in it. Did that make any sense at all?
That makes absolute sense. You've just said that you take something people would normally use against you, and you say, look here, I'm retaining my dignity, I have a sense of humor, I have the power to make you laugh. That's what I've heard. And I have the power to make you understand and communicate.
You communicated that much, much more succinctly than I did, yes. But that's exactly it.
For the first time in my life, I communicated succinctly. I normally do not do that. When you said that you came off the stage and you were a completely different person than you've been 6 minutes ago, who was Brian after 6 minutes as opposed to Brian who got up on that stage?
I was just much more confident. You know, it changed the way that I look at myself and at the way other people react to me as well. I mean, knowing what I know now in my late 40s, you know, you reach an age where you really just don't care what other people think about you. So I've reached that age now, and that has certainly helped. But, you know, at a time where I really needed confidence and I really needed to know that my stutter wasn't going to define me, that's what that moment did for me. And, you know, so then being able, you know, coming off the stage and having people come up to me and say, hey, great job, having the, you know, the guy who ran the comedy club come up and say, hey, you know, come out anytime, I'll put you on stage. I mean, having that happen, a few minutes after I had gotten off stage was really a life-changing thing. So really, it was just a matter of just having the confidence. You know, I still don't really like to talk on the phone, but, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's not going to, you know, I do it because, you know, I have to, and I feel better about it now, but I still don't really care for talking on the phone. But it was really just a confidence thing. I mean, I just, you know, I felt so much more confident, you know, in those three steps coming off the stage than I did, you know, almost entirely the rest of my life leading up to this.
Having faced the number one fear that most people have, public speaking, the idea of doing that will give a lot of people butterflies. What can others learn from you about innovating, creating, and making a difference from what you did?
I think it's mostly, and I've been thinking about this a lot, actually. I think it's really just taking a step back and sort of evaluating the things that scare us, the things that cause us to have fear. Some fear, obviously, is good. You know, we have a fear of, like I said before, we have a fear of jumping out of an airplane, rightfully so. You know, but some fear, I think, really just kind of, it's almost self-sabotage. You know, we fear the things that might cause us to advance. Maybe we're just afraid of going to our boss and asking for a raise or asking, you know, someone that we like out on a date. You know, I mean, the things that we're afraid of, I feel like if we just take a step back from them and really kind of think about what it is and think about kind of the mechanics of how this, you know, could go and look at all the possible outcomes, it's a lot of the things that we fear, I think, if we take a step back, probably aren't as scary as we make them out to be. And we're all dealing with something. I mean, everybody has, you know, some sort of baggage that they're carrying around. And it's just a matter of just taking a step back, looking at it, evaluating it, and finding out, is this really something that I need to be afraid of, and what is it keeping me from accomplishing?
That is a great question for people to keep in mind, whatever field of the arts they're in. Where will you be performing in the future when you do stand-up?
Well, I've been looking at a couple different options. My last performance was at the Comedy Zone here in Charlotte, North Carolina, last March, and I've kind of been talking with them a little bit about maybe doing some more, but right now I'm just kind of focused on the day job and a few other side projects I'm doing and trying to figure out, you know, what I'm going to do when I grow up. So I'm hoping, you know, sometime soon, maybe before the end of the year, to get back up on stage again. But for right now, it's kind of, I've had to kind of focus on a few other things and really haven't had the opportunity to get back on stage in a while.
Would you let me know, please, when you're going to be performing? I'd love to promote it.
Of course, absolutely, that'd be great.
Is there anything I failed to ask you that you really would have loved to have told me about your experience, about what you want people to know about stuttering, or about anything you're doing in the future?
If it's, I mean, I'm not a person who is, I don't want to be the face of speech impediments, you know. If there is a message in there, in what I do and in what I've done, if there is a message about stuttering, I think it's kind of, you know, the message is people who stutter aren't stupid. They're not. The only challenge is that the words just aren't coming out. You know, the words are there. They know what they want to say. They're physically not capable of getting the words out. And so, I mean, really, you know, the only message that I would say was don't try to finish their sentences, or don't encourage them to take their time, or just kind of let them work through what they're working through. And particularly parents, if you have a child who you think, you know, may have a stutter, just listen and be patient and encourage them to continue to work through it. Speech therapy does help. And I think, you know, the other message then for parents would be just to encourage your child and to let your child know that whatever it is that's going on with them, it doesn't make them any different than anybody else. You know, everybody has something that they're dealing with, and that just happens to be their thing. But that, you know, when I was growing up, if someone had been there with that message, it would have, I mean, my life would have changed a lot sooner than it did, you know. I mean, so really, it had to be particularly hard on parents and on kids and growing up. I mean, my parents were great about it. You know, I don't know that they did everything right, but they did everything that they could and everything that they thought, and they were always very supportive. You know, but in the mid-70s, I mean, nobody really knew how to deal with it. You know, I mean, I had teachers who thought that I was playing around. You know, there were teachers who just thought I was stupid. There were nobody really knew how to deal with it. And I think the biggest message, at the risk of going on, I'm a little bit too long about this, I think the biggest message is just, if you identify a child who may have a stutter, just be patient and just kind of let them work through it on their own.
Brian, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me. And I appreciate you reaching out, and it was a pleasure speaking with you.
You and I have been listening to broadcast professional and part-time comedian Brian Baltashevitz. If you'd like to see some of Brian's recent television production work, including a hilarious chili cook-off PSA that won him an Addy Award and a whole bunch of other awards, check out his YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/user/AZBalto. That's youtube.com/user/AZBalto. Meanwhile, as promised, I'll keep you posted in the future when Brian has other stand-up dates confirmed. And thank you to RadioGuestList.com for putting Brian in touch with us here at Over Coffee. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.